the vault. High atop the pastoral center of the Diocese of Camden, you're listening to Talking Catholic.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Talking Catholic. I'm Jen Morrow, and with me today is Mike Walsh. Hi.
Hey, Jen. How are you?
You know what I was thinking? I was thinking it's been a couple weeks since I've said that, because there's been a few podcasts we haven't been on together, so I had to remember who you were for a second.
I respect that. That is the downside of my rotation of co-hosts. You guys don't see me. Well, you unfortunately get to see me with great regularity, since we work in the same building and constantly working on the paper together. So, you know, my condolences. But it has been a little while. Actually, last week's, if anyone didn't go back and listen to last week's, I encourage you to, because I ate the greatest pizza on the podcast. I ate the greatest pizza I've ever eaten in my entire life.
Without you.
And, well, I'm encouraging people to head down to Carini's in Wildwood Crest, because that was the best pizza I have ever eaten on the planet.
When I saw that and listened to it on Talking Catholic with not me, that was Carrie Janice, also an amazing podcaster. I was stunned, because I know how much you love the pizza in Ocean City. So Then I knew that this one was above and beyond.
Yeah. Well, you know, so here's the thing about boardwalk pizza, right? So boardwalk pizza is the best pizza you can get on a boardwalk, but it's not necessarily the best pizza. We have a discussion amongst my crew of similarly minded food aficionados that, you know, do I love Manco and Manco's? I do love Manco and Manco's. If I was at my house in Glassboro, would I want Manco and Manco's? No, because Chicanti's is so much better than Manco's and Manco's. However, culturally, when you're at the shore, when you're down in Ocean City, I crave, not every time, but I crave eventually, sometime during the summer, getting a couple of slices from Manco and Manco, because there's a historical desire to have that. But it's not necessarily the best pizza I've ever had.
There's something about boardwalk food that mm-hmm. it just tastes better on the boardwalk. Like, I feel the same way. You know, I live in Ocean County, and when I'm walking the boardwalk and I have to get a slice of pizza or, I don't know, like, mm-hmm. what do you call those things? Like fish and chips? There mm-hmm. you go. That's what they're called.
Wait, fish and chips is what you were hoping I was going to be able to pull for you?
Yeah.
I got news for you. I never would have pulled fish and chips as a boardwalk food.
I don't know. For some reason, fish and chips is on my mind today. Anyway, it's
if
not
you
like
said,
it.
You know when you're in London and you're really craving something? You mean like fish and chips? Yeah, like
yes,
fish and chips.
You're right. I'm okay. Sorry. You know, when you're on the boardwalk and you want a shepherd's pie. You know, it's like that.
Right. Okay.
Anyway,
makes perfect sense.
I'm mm-hmm. not sure if it's that great or if it's just because I'm on the ocean and is bringing back memories being on the boardwalk from being mm-hmm. a kid.
Yeah, I would say that's true.
Yeah.
I'd say that's, yes. I would say that's exactly the point, is that there are some foods that are simply at that location that's something you desperately need to get.
Right.
If you're in Philadelphia, you desperately want a cheesesteak. You know, that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
However, anyway. Carini's is not on the boardwalk. It's in Wildwood Crest. I was actually chastised. This is something else I was going to mention to you. I was chastised by a few people I know who live in Wildwood Crest that I didn't like pop in while they were down there. Mm-hmm. And I have a rule about that. Like, I have my own personal rule. If I know someone who lives in a shore town, I don't naturally assume that they want to see me just because I happen to be in that shore town at that time, because shore towns are resorts and there's people flocking there all the time. And it's always my fear that people who live there year round are always getting bothered by pop-ins and stuff like that. So I will never pop. If you live at the shore, the best way to never see me is to live at a shore town, because I will never pop in on it.
I actually don't even, I would shock me if you turned out to be a popper-inner. Like, you don't seem like the pop-in kind. I think the listeners would agree, knowing you over the years.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I would never do that.
So talking about the shore, you have any good vacation plans this year for the rest of the summer?
Yeah, I'm going to Canada.
Oh, there you go.
Well, I'm taking my first ever cruise this summer. Never been on a cruise before, and later in August, me, the missus, and our son are going to do a cruise from New York City to, I forget where we're going, to the Bay of Fundy in Canada. And there was a bunch of different stops in Portland and Rhode Island along the way, culminating in Nova Scotia, where my family is from, parts of my family are from the Nova Scotia area. So we figured that would be a good cruise. Figured, you know, we did it for logistical reasons. We didn't want to fly anywhere because all these flights keep getting canceled. Yeah. I didn't feel like being stranded any place. So we figured we can drive to New York City, hop on a boat, taking a Norwegian cruise, and heading up the... So all we need to worry about now are hurricanes.
It should be a blast, minus the hurricanes.
Yeah, so long as there's not a hurricane, we should be fine.
I don't think that the time of year is right, but I'm still going to hope that you see the Northern Lights. Because that is on my bucket list. Though yes. I don't like the term bucket list, but that is on mine if I were to...
What are you talking about? We were just talking about death...
Nope, we're not going there today. I know, but I don't want to talk about the day. But anyway, the Northern Lights, right?
Yes. Okay. Also, for listeners, at some point we need to talk about her weird views on death. Will come up in a
different podcast.
On a different podcast. But yes, I've always wanted to see the Northern Lights as well. I went to Vancouver. I was in Vancouver for 5 days, about 10 years ago, and it bummed me out that I didn't see the Northern Lights at any time that I was up there.
I get that.
So, yes, I'm on board.
I was driving to work today, and you're probably wondering why I'm talking about travel. Or not, because I bring up random things all the time. I was driving into work today, and there's a van on the driving next to me, and I glance over, and it kind of looks like an old, like, A-team van or something that somebody just painted green. I know, right?
Right.
But on the back, it says 48 states with a check mark next to it, and underneath it, 365 days.
Nice.
Right? So I'm like, yeah, this guy or girl has got it going on. So I kind of sped up a little bit to honk the horn, and the guy looks over. I give him the thumbs up, and he gives me like that surfer dude hand signal. And at that moment, I was like, this guy knows how to live life or something, or I just loved this guy.
I you know what, during the pandemic, like everyone else, I had nothing better to do, so I was, you know, on my phone all the time checking out videos, and the ones that I kind of gravitated to were people who had figured out how to convert a van into their domicile and just drove around the United States. Yeah. Sort of experiencing everything that there is a part of me that would really like to do that at some point.
I would say there is a 95% part of me that would like to do that.
Yeah.
it put me in a good mood. Yeah. Like I saw him, I put on a happy song about travel, which I think it's about travel. It could be whatever. And I just jammed on the way to work going, I love that guy.
Just out of curiosity, what song was that?
Good travel. Life by One Republic.
Oh, okay.
That's a good song.
You can, sure, you can argue that would be a travel song. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
It has cities' names in it.
There you go.
That's all it takes.
But yes, I'm the same boat. There were a couple times we were actually having a conversation about where to go on vacation this year, where I said, you know, why don't we just do a road trip to Montana and just drive along and just see what Montana's like. So, you know.
Big sky country.
Exactly.
If I went to Montana, dude ranch. But not like a kitschy one. Like, I don't know. Maybe they all are. No. I just want to eat beans out of a can and ride a horse, which you would think growing up in Texas I would have done by now. I've only done one of those things. Actually, I have done both. I don't know who I'm talking about.
You have eaten beans out of a can, though, right?
Yeah. Okay. And I've ridden a horse. Maybe just not at the same time, and that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I like the way your mind moves through.
Complete randomness.
Okay.
All right.
Just to lead ourselves into the conversation, though, yep. I have been keeping an eye on the Pope. You know, this week has been to the north, speaking of the Northern Lights. Mm-hmm. And he's been on the, you know, I say this, you know, respectfully, sort of the apology tour of Canada, he's been apologizing for what had happened to Indigenous peoples in Canada during the last century. And, you know, it's weird because it was one of those, you know, you're kind of torn about things like that. On the one hand, I love seeing the Pope in North America. For people who may have heard this in the past, there is lore that somewhere in my bloodline is Native American blood. I'm told that we have a connection to it's an Algonquin tribe called the Kickapoo, who now are in Kansas and in northern Mexico. Hmm. So any time I hear about things with Indigenous peoples, it always kind of perks my interest. And obviously any time related to the Pope, I kind of keep an eye on things. You know, it was great to see the Pope in Canada. I felt bad that he was in a wheelchair the entire time. Yeah, he's definitely hurting. Definitely. It was peculiar to see him wearing an Indigenous person's headdress. That was I did not anticipate that. It was to pop up on my AP feed at one point.
Yeah.
But it seems from everything I can tell so far that it was a success. That what he had hoped to do, which hoped to accomplish, was to, you know, offer some sort of closure to the Indigenous peoples, you know, peoples who were often misunderstood, even by Canadians who, you know, are seem to be in the at the forefront of apologizing for things, and I say that with as I earlier mentioned that I have some Canadian in my blood. That that seemed to have been a good trip, and I hope it was beneficial to the people who needed that sort of closure.
I agree.
So, yeah.
Good stuff.
You weren't paying attention, were you?
No,
I mean, you probably did the conscience, but have you been following the Pope in Canada?
Yes, I've been reading the articles mainly. Okay. And reading about Pope, but doing a more of the reading about
what happened to the indigenous peoples.
Well, their response to the Pope's Pope's visit. Yeah. So, and I think he's there till
today,
the 29th, I think. Or today. 28th or 29th.
Yeah. I know he goes to Quebec for one last set of meetings, and then he goes to a very northern, one of the northernmost towns in Canada. There's like 150 people up there. People don't realize it when you're talking about Canadians. Most of Canada lives within 100 miles of the United States, even though the country is so huge, it's mostly empty because it's very hard to live up there in the northern areas.
I think when I first met you, I got a strange call from Saskatchewan. And I remember you saying, I love Saskatchewan. I don't know why. Just for some reason, that memory just popped into my head.
No, I've never been to Saskatchewan, but I had a friend of mine who is a comic. And he would take the Canadian. There's like a rite of passage to do this Canadian tour. Mm-hmm. And he would often tell... he's a good comic, and I like him, but he's not famous or anything like that. And he told me once, he goes, I'm huge in Saskatchewan. I just love that phrase. It's a great phrase. Anyway. We've digressed enough today.
Yes.
So we actually have a point. We are back into my old stomping grounds in terms of an area of the diocese that I like to be at whenever I can. We're at Catholic Charities, right up the road from us, 1845, so we're out of the vault, but the sound is good because we have our good mics with us today, and there's not a carnival going on in the background like a few of the episodes earlier.
Right.
So we're here, but why are we here, Jen?
So today we are with Jose Sanchez, who is the Director of Community Services for Immigration, Refugees, and Migrant Program with the Diocese of Camden, Catholic Charities. And also, we have Ryan Collins, who is a rising junior at the University of Notre Dame, who has been interning with Catholic Charities this summer. So welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you so much for having us.
And Jose has been on the podcast many times. Now, back in the old days, our former colleague, Mary McCusker, I would basically have to, she would have to be like a rabid dog pulling and coercing him onto the podcast. And we didn't have to try this time. No. He kind of came to us. It was beautiful. Jose, I've said for years, you're a natural at this. I'm happy you're volunteering for it now.
I will say that I did not volunteer that easily. Somehow just being able to talk on the podcast and everything. And I don't like my voice the way it sounds, but it is what it is. So I am here. I didn't wrestle. I wanted to be a good support for our intern Ryan, so I am here.
I'm very excited about that. And by the way, you have a voice made for radio.
Yeah.
You have that nice deep baritone. You should be on this all the time. I disagree. We should give you your own show.
No. Well, no room for interpretation there.
Well, in the other times that we were here, it was specifically about other things, right? Mm-hmm. And one, it was related to disaster response and our ongoing contributions in the diocese to our neighbors down at the border, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then there was another one, at least it was with my friend and coworker, Sylvia Lumo, related to domestic violence. So those are things that are close to my heart, and I don't mind talking about them when people ask me. So, and this program here right now that we're going to be talking about is also close to my heart, so we'll see where it goes.
So can you tell us a little bit more about the program for those who are not aware of what the Immigration, Refugees, and Migrants Program does?
Sure, my pleasure. So this is actually a rebranding of our Refugee Resettlement Program. So about 2 years ago, and probably before the pandemic, which I don't remember when that started because it seems like 100 years ago, but we used to be a resettlement agency or a program, right? So that what that meant was that we would resettle around an average of 100 refugees per year. things change in the state of New Jersey, and then not wanting or requiring, saying that they had too many refugees on board. So we ended up being a reception and placement organization. So what that means is that if there is a refugee that's coming from another country and they have family members within the Diocese of Camden's geographic area, they would call us and we would help to place them and provide them with whatever services they need so they could resume a normal life here in South Jersey. So we've been doing that. Up to, let's say, a year ago in October, we ended up working with people from Afghanistan because of what happened with the war. Mm-hmm. So we were working with 30 Afghans from there. And now the changing is also happening again because of the Ukrainian war. Mm-hmm. So we're actually dealing with people from the Ukraine. And then on top of that, we have these ongoing migrations from the Texas border with Cubans and Haitians. And you're looking at somewhere around, on a monthly basis, a couple hundred Cubans, a couple hundred Haitians are coming into the Diocese of Camden geographic area. Mm-hmm. And then they find us. A lot of the things that happens, and you guys know that the south of the United States, most of the people are Catholic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So what's going on is that the first thing that they are looking for is a Catholic organization that, and they're asked for help. And then what we do here is we'll say, well, what can we do for you? And we'll do our best to make sure that they're being helped. Mm-hmm. So they're finding us. They're finding us here in Camden. They're finding us in Atlantic City, in Vineland, and so on. So that's where we're at, and that's what we've been doing.
Hmm. I don't know. I was just moved by the idea that they're finding us because of that universality of the church. You know, that the first thing they do when they come up is looking toward their faith, knowing that the Catholic Church has those outlets.
Right. And they're usually, they'll be saying that we're looking for Caritas, right? And that's what's south from us. I think that the United States is the only one that calls Caritas Catholic Charities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, talking a little bit about who's coming, I had heard about the Haitians. This is the first time I've heard the Cubans were coming in large numbers. Do you know what the reason for that is?
It's finances over there. There's people aren't able to work. There's political change in Cuba, and basically what's happening is that people aren't able to take care of their families.
Yeah.
So there was a 2020 interview about a couple of weeks ago where a gentleman basically sold all his possessions to get an airplane ticket to South America.
Wow.
And then he's meandering his way toward the Texas border to actually to allow himself to be arrested, right? They're captured by the Immigration and Customs Services. And then what would happen is that he'll say that he's looking for asylum.
Wow.
And then he knows where he wants to go because he has relatives, let's say here in Pensauken. So Immigration and Customs Enforcement allows him to go with some paperwork. So they know where to find him. And then he ends up in, let's say, Pensauken. And then relatives in Pensauken say, well, let's go to Catholic Charities down the street. They'll help you out. Last I heard, it was about 22,000 Cubans that had come through the Texas border.
Wow.
And it's outnumbering the Haitian population, which was a little bit under that.
That's fascinating.
It is, because the idea that he's meandering with the intentions of getting caught, like that already is telling you that his life is in danger. Nobody just gives up everything that they own and know and love of their homeland and then looks to get caught. You know, there's obviously a reason. You know, it's his life.
Well, that is correct. One of the things that people think about when coming to the United States is that 1950s type feel that it's you could do whatever you want over here, the American dream.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some people here lost it. They don't think that they can make it, but other people in other countries see what the possibilities in the United States are, and they see that as the American dream. And they will do just about anything to get over here.
Yeah.
Then once they're here, trying to figure out that said American dream, now their earning finances are coming in, right? And now they're able to send finances to their family relatives over there in the homeland, hoping one day that they would come over. But the reality is that at least they're going to be financially secure.
Yeah.
You know, earning, $5-6 a month, and then having rations from the government over there, that doesn't cut it for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And when people start working, and both groups, Haitians and Cubans, they all want to work. Mm-hmm. And they have a really good work ethic. The problem is that they need working papers. And then because of all of this stuff that the United States has gotten into with all these wars and all these refugees that are coming in, it's going to take a long time for them to get employment authorization documents. And so they have to figure out how to live.
Which is where you come in. With
to whatever. Some extent, we do, yes. Yeah. So we will provide the basics for them. So we'll, if they need some money and we have it, we'll give it to them. Mm-hmm. Food, clothing, we'll do that as well. We'll see if we can find them employment. Most of the times they won't be eligible for it, but they want to try at least to talk to the employers and say, look, this is who I am. This is what I need. And then we leave it at that because it's not our part to deal with saying, are you employed now or not? Or you're earning? We work on maintaining their dignity so they keep their dignity. Mm-hmm. So what is it that you need and what can we help you to get to where you're going or where you want to go?
Yeah.
And then we'll do that. We'll hold their hands for a little while, but most of the time they'll just say, this is what I need, and I'll be on my own. But can I come back to you if I need something else?
Yeah.
And we say, of course.
So, Ryan, you have been interning with the Diocese of Camden here for the entire summer so far?
I've been here for about a month and a half.
Okay. Now, you are, a rising junior at the University of Notre Dame?
Yes, that's correct. I'm studying applied mathematics and political science.
And tell me how you got here to the Diocese of Camden Catholic Charities.
Sure. I had been working throughout high school at a Catholic Charities food pantry in Paterson, New Jersey. It's the Father English Center.
Okay.
And I had really enjoyed my time there. I'd say that's one of the most powerful experiences I've ever had in my life, seeing just the kindness of the people there and how they really truly wanted to make an impact on their community. This wasn't just their jobs, this was their passion, and everything that they stood for, I absolutely agreed with. Mm-hmm. And so this is something that I knew I wanted to do. So I have an interest in studying law after graduation, and I saw the opportunity for the immigration refugee and migrant program is somewhat of an opportunity for me because it's such a hot button issue in the United States.
Sure.
And something I read about immigration law is that every single decision, every case decided by a judge affects a person. And I felt that the dignity of every human person and Catholic social teaching lined up with that. And I felt like I could really make an impact here. And so I got in contact with Catholic Charities and they put me in touch with Jose. And so I've not only wanted it to be gain experience in an office setting, but also feel like I'm truly making an impact, which is something that I can do here at Catholic Charities.
And so have you had that experience in the last month and a half?
Oh, absolutely. So I've had numerous experiences here where I've really gained a lot of knowledge on the whole process of being a refugee. Obviously, I try and put myself in their shoes. It's difficult to do, but I go through paperwork. I help people move into their houses. I've taken furniture. I've also shadowed an immigration attorney in Cherry Hill. His name is Mr. Canales. I was able to go see a federal immigration trial in Philadelphia, which was a really interesting experience.
Wow. What was that like?
It was really interesting. Again, it's like this is somebody's life on the line here. They do not want to be sent back. And so that was really interesting to be able to witness and see and gain experience. I met the judge and everything like that. And I really enjoyed that. And I don't know, I just feel like you can really make an impact here, and seeing the whole process and seeing how long it takes, like even someone who is applying through a family member and has a high chance of success, it's still a 2-year waiting period.
Right.
So seeing how the whole immigration system is backed up is really sad, but I know here at Catholic Charities, they're helping a lot of people.
Did that kind of, seeing that part of you know, you've been talking about how actually doing the paperwork, helping people move in, and then, you know, the lawyer step. Is that you think helping reinforce your decision or possibility of going into law school after?
Absolutely. A big part of my life is the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. I'm a practicing Catholic. I went to a Catholic high school. I now go to a Catholic college at the University of Notre Dame, and that was a huge step in my process. And I definitely am looking at Catholic law school, and something that I think is really important for just in general is keeping the morals of the Catholic Church. I think that's something that's super important. I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
No, you answered the question. That's okay. It. Yeah.
So
I can tell that you're passionate about this as well.
Like, yeah,
that's a good thing.
Yeah. When I talked to Jose in the past, like you said, you know, it's something that's close to your heart. Mm-hmm. And I can see that with you too, Ryan. Like, I have a feeling that, you know, it's not surprising to me that you've taken this turn, let me put it that way, because you've mentioned Catholic social teaching at least two or three times. And
well, if he spends any amount of time with the executive director here, Kevin Hickey, then that's all here at least a third of the time.
Absolutely.
Although I feel like we actually skipped over the most impressive part of his personal dissertation. I'm sorry, what degrees are you getting?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm getting a I'm double majoring in applied in computational mathematics and statistics and political science at Notre Dame.
All right. I love the fact that he's taking both. Are you taking them together with the idea of fusing them?
Little bit. So I just declared the political science major, and I'm going to be starting the courses of that next semester. However, I started out with math, and then I saw that something that I was talking to a political science professor at Notre Dame about is the opportunity for research with math and political science, and that's something that I'm interested with law, especially that.
So I'm a political junkie, and the podcasts I listen to are all politically based, but they're not political necessarily in the sense of rah-rah one party over the other. They're all about data and how you can, you know, how you can sort of interpret what people really want and what they really need by using all these different computational pieces and some advanced polling and stuff like that. So I definitely want to keep him within the Catholic Church, because I keep listening to these podcasts and going, okay, that's the kind of brain power we need in the Catholic Church to understand in a data world how to... Because we have proven on numerous occasions that our spirituality is not limited to just being in church on a Sunday. Spirituality is something that's living and breathing around us. If you need a Star Wars reference, it's the Force, okay? It binds us together, right? But it doesn't take us away from the things that we have to focus on. So the fact that there is someone who seems to appear at least to have a good spiritual nature, sought out something where he could learn and yet put his skills to use in Catholic social justice, and has figured out that there's a connection between applied sciences and applied mathematics and sciences and political science. I'm very excited for the future. Either that, or he's going to develop, you know, evil, you know, political bots, one or the other. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think this is fantastic. So this does my heart good.
Do you want to talk about Comic-Con afterward and see where Ryan can fit into that?
Just because he's very smart doesn't necessarily mean he's a Comic-Con guy. Are you a Comic-Con guy?
I am not.
See? Don't assume things.
He's too busy.
It sounded nerdish, but actually he sounds to me like he's dedicated.
Yeah,
so
agreed.
Leave the nerddom to me. But that's so to our listeners who are always worried about the future and what's coming next, remember that whatever you think you're seeing on television or you're reading about in the paper or whatever, there are people you don't know about like him who see a problem, realize they have some abilities, and go after it. So, Ryan, thank you for once again giving me hope.
So tell me some of the projects that you've been working on here. You were saying that you were moving furniture. Was that for some of the Afghan population or Ukrainian population that you spoke about, Jose?
So it's actually, it's been a number of things. So one of the things that I like to do with any staff person, but particularly young people that have interest in this type of work. Now, I want to give myself a pat on the back in the Diocese of Camden, because Ryan found us, and he's from North Jersey. Mm-hmm. And he came through Catholic Charities USA. People say, like, well, where can he go to learn or get a little bit of experience that would be hands-on? And they said, Catholic Charities Diocese of Camden.
Mm-hmm.
We're a really small program, but we put an output out there that actually affects a lot.
Jose, listen, you and I are on the same page here. Don't worry about this because Jen loves it when I bring this stuff up, but the Diocese of Camden and Catholic Charities certainly is, we're just really good. I talk about this every single episode, and I'm going to continue to talk about it because I think it's true, and we should be a little bit not sinfully prideful, but with the idea that I hope people will come and see what we're doing, because we're doing a lot of great things down here in our small little bucolic area.
So for your question, Jennifer, we ended up initially in the first week, 2 weeks of Ryan being here, and this was all coincidental. There was a Ukrainian family that moved from Newfield to Vineland, New Jersey, straight from the because of the war. So we set up something and we sent furniture down in that area. There is an Afghan family that moved to Sicklerville. They ended up being relocated from Florida to Sicklerville. We helped find them a house. Ryan and a couple of the other intern and some staff people sent them furniture that way. I received a phone call of a young woman that had recently come out of the domestic violence shelter. Mm-hmm. And she needed some furniture, and I thought that it would be an interesting way for them to go see, you know, what people are coming through. Because of the war and everything, and others because of the war that's happening over here with domestic violence, and see how that person and her children are trying to build their life back together. And if it was only a couple pieces of furniture that we gave them, that we make their life feel a little bit better, then we did our job. And that's what we are here to do. And it's not to pat ourselves on the back because of that we helped that client. Right. It's because we have the ability to do it, and sometimes the resources to be able to do it, so we do it. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the things. A couple of other things that Ryan has worked on is actually going through paperwork. It's like reams of paper for at least for one Afghan family, and looking for medical records. And we don't know what medical records look like, but so we have to go through each and every page and say, like, this is it. Because at the end of the day, at some point in the next 2 weeks, these kids are going to need to be registered in school. So then we need to know that their vaccines are being taken care of and everything.
Yeah, something that really surprised me about the whole process, and I think this gets lost in a lot of the politicalization of this issue, is that how many steps there are to this process. People think that it's just so much paperwork, and you can get bogged down in it that people forget that these are people. It's not just this. These aren't just numbers of people, and I think that a lot of people, you need to come to this issue with a lot of compassion and empathy and realize that these people are just doing what every human being has a desire to do, and that's give a better life to their families and themselves. And going through this paperwork, it's a lot, and just seeing like, oh my gosh, I need to go through all this stuff and medical records, but these are these people's lives, and they need to get these kids in school and stuff like that. And so that's something that really surprised me about the whole thing.
So it sounds like when you're going through the paperwork, you're very aware that this is not just paperwork.
It's for sure. I mean, you definitely have to put yourself in that mindset, or you're not going to do your best job. So you got to realize that you need to get this stuff all in order for them and make sure that everything's in the right place and everything, so that to get it to the appropriate people, they can easily find this stuff, and so that it wouldn't be an issue for them, for someone who may not know the language or something like that, who wouldn't be able to deal with the appropriate people.
For the paperwork that you've gone through, have you gotten to meet any of the people as well?
Yes. So like Jose was saying, that I was able to help an Afghan family in Sicklerville. Mm-hmm. So that was on my first day, actually. So I went immediately, got in the truck and helped move around. Although they didn't speak English, I did get to meet them and just move in their furniture. And it's really great to see that this just house that they've been placed in is now becoming more of a home, and mm-hmm. seeing that they can be more comfortable and stuff like that. And then a few weeks later, again, as Jose had mentioned, I helped a Ukrainian family move in. So that was also great. They spoke English, so I got to hear a little bit about their story. And they had two little kids, and they were arguing over some toy. And Aww. It was just great to see. I mean, it was kids being kids.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine the hardships that they had to face coming to this country. And I know I keep reiterating it, but yeah. people are people, and you need to realize that these are people's lives. I mean, these kids just want to play with their toys and stuff like that. They want to be normal kids.
I mean, at the end of the day, for both of you, you must go home and just think about what you saw that day and the people you've met that day, right? I mean, how can you not be affected, right?
Yeah. Well, so some of the things that we need to continuously think about as social service providers or the politicians or whoever it is, right? If you're just pushing paper, you're going to be pushing paper, and it's going to be a case number and not an individual. And when you match all that paperwork to a face and have a conversation with that person, and now you see that they're an individual and that they're all, that family is made up of a whole bunch of different little people and everything like that, and personalities and everything, you completely see the project and the programs completely different. Mm. You know, because now you're placing yourself in that situation and you're changing their lives just by being there. Mm. Right? Just because you went over there, you implanted yourself and you had a conversation with them, they're better off. Mm. And then you're a better person because now you know a little bit more about that family. And that's some of the things that a lot of people aren't able to. They'll do one thing or the other, either paperwork or direct service. And one of the experiences being able to do both.
Mm-hmm. You talking about the language barrier a little bit just kind of made me think that there's other ways to communicate than language. So even when you were helping the Afghan family, I'm sure, you know, there's smiles, there's the look in the eyes, there's,
for
you
sure.
know, so that shouldn't stop, or I would say it shouldn't stop people from wanting to volunteer and things, yeah?
No, absolutely not. A language barrier should not be a reason that you don't think you can volunteer. They understand, your actions speak louder than your words. You just being there and helping them speaks volumes. Mm-hmm.
So let me I'll say a little story about people and something that happened when Ryan was in this place. So Mustafa, our staff person, offered a table to one of the people that were there. There's a young lady, she's a teenager, right? So the young lady says, no, she doesn't want it. Then Mustafa says, okay, and everything. And then the young lady goes upstairs. Young lady comes back downstairs, and Mustafa said, did you think about the table, right? And the young lady says, yes, I really want it. And then she seemed like she was really happy. And it's saying like, well, what's the difference between you going upstairs and then coming back down and that joy, right? It ended up that Mustafa was talking to two different people because they're twins. So it was hysterical.
It was
because it was like
because
two
we,
of them,
we
right?
Yeah, we didn't realize until they had both come outside at the same time. So we were really confused because they were wearing similar outfits and stuff like that. And it was, yeah.
So stuff happens, and, yeah. and you could go upstairs, make pretend you're another person, and come back down, right?
Right.
But the reality was that there was two people upstairs, and
that
was hysterical. Yes.
Oh, my God.
So those are good things.
This working for Catholic Charities or being a social worker in general, because I know a lot of them, I've talked about them on the podcast before, there is always a story, and there is always mm-hmm. a new story that you've never had to deal with before, because, ladies and gentlemen, we are all snowflakes, and we all have different stories, and nothing is ever quite the same, and these guys do not have a boring life. That's why I was like coming over here, because I get to learn something new.
Yeah.
So thanks for not disappointing.
Our pleasure, yes.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, so I was going to say, I've also heard that you have been working with the New Jersey Catholic Conference, is that right, on some paperwork?
So here's another one of those stories and everything. I ended up doing something that I needed to take. They took me out of the office, and Kevin Hickey came by and he says, oh, Mr. Sanchez is not here. Ryan, would you like to do this? So he imposed a project on Ryan. Ryan actually took it graciously and everything that Ryan has been working on it. So you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So I worked on a little one-page write-up on recent gun control legislation, kind of the Catholic viewpoint of that. So a lot of my research was involving the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops and seeing what their views and statements on the issue have been in the past, and kind of keeping kind of the just Catholics in general updated. And so also Mr. Hickey had given me a book on social doctrine of the Catholic Church, which talked a little bit about like arms smuggling and stuff like that. So I also included that in the one page write up, especially with everything that's been going on recently with mass shootings.
Sure.
And recent legislation is again being brought up with gun control and stuff like that. So it was really interesting to see the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops kind of viewpoint on it, and then also being able to write something.
Yeah, that's a lot of research for one page.
Yeah, it was it was a lot of reading letters in the past that they had sent out to their congregations and things like that, and kind of talking about, so they had supported, I think it was in the early 90s, a ban on assault weapons that had expired in 2004. And so they just, there was a letter recently where they reiterated their point where they still stand by that. And they're hopeful in the future that gun control legislation will be passed throughout Congress.
So for the listeners who are not aware, the New Jersey Catholic Conference is the public policy arm for the state's bishops. Were you aware of that organization, Ryan?
Not before, but once they put me in contact with their people, and I had known I would be writing for them, I wanted to do a little bit of research.
Yeah. Sounds like you did a lot of research. Yeah,
to make sure that I knew what they stand for and everything like that. So
leave it up to Kevin Hickey to pile it on. Voluntold, isn't that what you always do to us, Mike?
I am a big supporter of voluntold, but also knowing where your resources are. And if you've got a guy who has an appreciation for political science, even if he hasn't taken a class yet in it, sure. Send him that way. He's already he's already collegiate, so I'm sure he's written one or two papers in his life, and I bet you they've all been longer than one page.
Yeah.
Although I have a philosophy that writing the short ones is actually harder than writing the long ones.
I 100% agree. That's how it is with news articles,
too. I would say the same thing. Yeah. You want to make sure that you get everything in.
Yeah, see?
So far, has there been anything that surprised you about your internship, Ryan?
Just so, like I had said, throughout high school, I had only really worked at a food pantry in Catholic Charities. I really didn't know the scope of what they were doing. So within the first few weeks of Catholic Charities, Jose felt it would be beneficial for me to meet with all the kind of branches of Catholic Charities of Camden. And so I spent a day interviewing. So I met with Mr. Hickey, the executive director. I met with also people involved in the Veterans Division, drug rehabilitation, prison ministry, and stuff like that. So I really didn't understand. I knew that the Catholic Church obviously all stood for this stuff, but I didn't realize that Catholic Charities was doing all of this in one small office here in Camden. And like Jose was saying, it's a small office, but truly the impact, I'd say bang for your buck, is massive. They really truly make an impact in their community. And like I was saying, up in Patterson, the people really like to help. This isn't their job. This is their job that they come to every day, but it's also something they're incredibly passionate about and want to help.
Yeah.
In the very short period of time, Ryan has learned everything that I've learned in the time that I've been here as well. My previous statements aside, this really is perhaps the best Catholic Charities office in terms of its abilities, who it touches, and the professional level with which it does its work. I mean, we've had representatives from Catholic Charities on a couple of times a year on the podcast, and each and every time, you know, I'm blown away by their dedication, their knowledge, and their heart. I mean, that's the thing, and then Ryan has picked up on that. Everyone here is being paid for their work, but they stick around because they love it. Mr. Hickey's been working for Catholic Charities for most of his adult life. Sylvia's been here.
I'm going to say close to 30 years.
Sylvia Lumeau, the director of, she's now got many titles, but director of behavioral health, right? And that's just it, is you stay here because the work is so needed. And it's not just in Camden City. You know, we often have to remind people that that I've sort of given this organization a new name, a new secondary name, which is Catholic Charities of South Jersey, because it's really, they touch every county from the river to the ocean all the way down to the tip of Cape May. And so they're supporting 20,000-30,000 people a year, based on the need. And it's important. And all the, you know, not every diocese, but most dioceses have some form of a Catholic Charities within it. So if you're listening to this somewhere outside of South Jersey, you know, I'm going to encourage you to, you know, maybe you don't know about your Catholic Charities, but the ones in New Jersey are pretty darn good.
So I know we want to talk to Jose about another program very quick, but real quick before we do that, I just wanted to say, Ryan, if you had any advice for other young people who are looking to live their Catholic faith, what would you say to encourage them, you know, not to be afraid and get out there and give it a shot?
I would definitely tell them to give it a shot. Yeah. Check out your local Catholic Charities like I did in high school. I was encouraged by my brother who had worked at the Catholic Charities of Patterson. But definitely, if you can find a group of people who want to live out their Catholic faith, definitely go volunteer. Spend a Saturday. It's really powerful. The amount of people you meet who are just truly incredible and the things that you get out of it, not only that you're giving to other people, I know that's somewhat selfish, but you gain a lot of experience in just truly meeting new people who you may not meet in your everyday lives, and then just give it a shot. You will truly not regret it.
Good. Well, I hope all our young listeners or parents of young listeners encourage their kids, grandkids, brothers, sisters to get out there and do some volunteer work and just live your faith. So, Jose, I know we also wanted to talk about an initiative with Catholic Charities USA called Border is Everywhere. Is that right?
Yes. So one of the things that I guess Ryan was mentioning is what we're looking at is welcoming the stranger, right? And this is what we're called to do. So about 2 years ago, a Catholic Charities organization in, and I'm going to say up north, Massachusetts or something like that, ended up with a bunch of Liberians just popping in. It was like dozens of them. They came from the border. And the executive director of the Catholic Charities over there did not know about this. So they just ended up at the doorstep. Everything said, who is sending these people? And it ended up that they came from the Mexican border. So a number of people started thinking about how do we fix this to make aware the organization of these people are heading to. For example, Catholic Charities here in South Jersey. So the initiative is called The Border is Everywhere, which means is that there's eight practicing Catholic Charities, four around the border, four away from the border, us in South Jersey. There's one in Florida. There's one in New York. I always forget the fourth one, but regardless of the fact is that there will be a list being put together from the people that are coming through the border, particularly the Cubans, the Haitians, Angolans, Ukrainians, Guatemalans, et cetera. And then on a weekly basis or so, we're going to be getting a database that says these individuals are going to end up in your geographic area. They're going to need some sort of social services and everything. Would you be able to communicate with them? So that's where we're at. So the initiative, the border is everywhere, is because they're coming from the border, but they're just trickling out to all parts of the United States. This is a pilot program for right now, for 1 year. So our deal with Catholic Charities USA would be to get that list and to go through each and every one of those names, to call the people up and ask them what is it, what type of services do they need. But at the end of the day, it's trying to figure out if we can get them to see an immigration lawyer to request asylum. And then, as Ryan mentioned earlier, is all these steps that need to happen. So our commitment to Catholic Charities USA is 50 families. It could be a case of one. It could be a case of 19. At the same time, we will deal with each one accordingly. So that's what we're going to be doing starting around September. One of the things that I asked the listeners for here is if they want to contribute some of their time and talent by way of a phone call, they just contact me, jose.sanchez@camdendiocese. Let me know that they're interested in participating in this and making those phone calls. I'll be happy to walk them through what the program will look like and what it will be. There's a matrix that we have to follow. So there's very little chance of making a mistake. But the payoff is that this immigrant, this migrant, this refugee is going to come and they're going to know that somebody cares about them. Most of the times people are feeling alone and everything, that nobody cares about them. They're feeling afraid and everything. And when we put a phone call out, or where we smile at them and we say, here, we're here for you and everything, this is part of our community, right? So the Diocese of Camden and all these neighborhoods that we serve is part of our community and everything. And they're coming into our community, so we're welcoming the stranger. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we would like to do more with that.
Yeah, something Jose always reiterated to me was the passage Matthew 25:35-36. It's just welcoming the stranger. It's being there for them. Anything that you do for someone is doing something for Jesus. It's when you're helping somebody, you're helping God.
It's beautiful.
I'm surprised they don't give out Matthew 25 tattoos, or like those rub-on tattoos in this office, because Matthew 25 gets brought up a lot, and we like to remind people, and it's an important thing to remind them. Our spirituality emanates from the Bible and from the Eucharist and from Christ, and you know, we didn't come to these things by accident. And I should also point out, not everybody that works at Catholic Charities is Catholic, and most of the people we support are not Catholic, but it's the Catholic nature of Catholic Charities, which is what brings us to help folks anywhere, the stranger.
Yeah, people forget that in the beginning of Matthew, Jesus had to go to Egypt with the Holy Family. Mm-hmm. They were refugees in a foreign land, and they, if you remember that, you realize that you truly are helping. You're doing a great thing.
That's right. These are people that are in need of help. The other stuff is just commentary, punditry. Somebody presents themselves to you and they are in need of help. We are obligated as Catholics to help them. Mm-hmm. That's the truth. And that's why I'm always get such a kick out of being here. And I like to remind people of that, particularly when a lot of heated political debates come up. And it's like, you know what? Take all that stuff aside. Is there a person in need? Then we need to help that person.
Mm-hmm. Period.
Period. Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. We need to help that person.
Mm-hmm. So this will start in September, Jose?
Yes. Officially, there's going to be some training for staff. We will need to. I requested a sample listing of who the people are that are coming here. They're here already, who the people are. And, you know, particularly we're looking for, there's going to be Spanish-speaking people, Ukrainian-speaking people, Russian, Creole, Haiti, French. Those languages are the ones that are popping up right now. Mm-hmm. There could be more. I know that there's some people from Angola that are coming through the border. They might end up over here as well. Mm-hmm. So yes, it's September will be it. Between now and September, we will be doing some preliminary setups to see what the process will look like with maybe a sample person or a sample client, and we'll take it from there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if those are interested to take part in the volunteer with the program, would they need to start contacting you now or wait till September? Or
now is better, because we can have conversations on, so there's always questions on that people are asking and say, like, well, I'll be the host of some for a Ukrainian family, right? And they'll think it's just bringing them over, eventually they'll find a house and so on. Mm-hmm. But so many social services and so many steps to get them to those services need to take place. And a lot of the time people end up being overwhelmed. So they come and talk to us and we walk them through the process.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So would you mind giving out your email and number again, or whatever, however you want to be contacted?
Well, it's jose.sanchez@camdendiocese.org, or the office number, which is 856-342-4166.
And Ryan, how long are you here till?
Next week is my final week. Sadly.
It's going to be a bummer.
Yeah, I have to go back to school.
No, we understand.
But I do like the way you use "have to." See, like, you're enjoying it.
Yeah,
so you wanted to say.
Here.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, we hope you come back, because your passion is contagious.
Yeah, I have a feeling you'll be welcome here next summer as well.
Yeah.
I have no doubt.
Hope so.
And probably on your winter break and your summer break too, if necessary. And you know, these guys, this particular Catholic Charities loves to send people to other parts of the United States to help out. So I'm sure they'd be more than happy to ship out an intern somewhere as well. So mm-hmm. don't you worry. And they're always looking for people to come back and work here when their days are done. So it's a great, you were able to find yourself in a great working experience. It will be a wonderful jumping off point for other things that you go to. So congratulations on making that decision and doing it on your own as well.
Thank you.
You deserve a lot of credit for that. Mm-hmm. Just out of curiosity, do you enjoy Notre Dame?
Yeah, I really like it. Hopefully, hopefully we have a good football season this year. We have a new coach. Ohio State's the first game, so absolutely love it. Football games are really fun. I have great friends in O'Neill Family Hall, the dorm I live in, so I really enjoy it.
That's now see, that gets me excited. I like that. I do. Yeah. Well, okay, so I dreaded going back to school every single year because I appreciate my college, but it wasn't a great fit for me. But I didn't realize that until hindsight. So I get excited when other people get excited to go back to school. So good for you.
Yep.
Well, thank you both for being a part of the podcast today. We really appreciate it. Ryan, we hope nothing but the best for you. And you really
thank
do.
You.
You are welcome to come back anytime. And if you want to become a marketer, I have space in my office as well. So you can come and learn a new thing when you're done at Catholic Charities. I won't take you until you're done at Catholic Charities. And Jose, thank you so much for being a part of this and coming on. I know how much you love it. So it means a lot to me that you came on.
My pleasure, Mike. And one comment I'll make for you is that if Kevin Hickey would have put you with me when you started over here, you would have gotten all of those learning experiences in the first couple of months.
You know what? That's right. So it's Kevin's fault.
Yeah.
It is. It's Kevin's fault. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. My pleasure for both of you. Yeah.
And thank you very much, Jen, for being a part of this, and to our listeners for listening. So have a great week, everybody, and we'll talk to you again next week. See ya.